is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Dave Wyman and Mike Lefko today. We're down at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Got a chance to just get out there and watch a little bit of practice. We'll get into that in a second. But today on the show, we got Mike Ford, your Mariner slugger, who had a home run stolen from him.
He did.
The other day against Texas. But he's coming on at 3 o'clock. And then right after that, Jarek Reed. He was the last pick. No, he was the second to last pick for the Seahawks this year. And from New Mexico, a safety guy who... what did John call him? An angry little elf.
An angry elf.
So we'll talk to him about that.
Oh, yeah,
because
he
was asked about it before when they had the rookie camp. And he said something about, well, John didn't say it to my face. Otherwise, there'd be a problem. And then he started laughing. So anyway, he seems like a good-natured guy. But look, just taking a look at him out there, we're watching all of the all the rookies and some of the new guys. But, a lot to talk about there. And then John Boyle from Seahawks.com is going to come down and visit us at 4 o'clock, talk about this team and how they look, how they're shaping up. And then El Hombre, of course, Michael Bradley at 5 o'clock. So, is this your first time down here, Mike?
No, it was here last week when you were on vacation.
Yeah.
OTAs.
Okay.
But you know what's funny? This had a very similar feel to OTAs because you kind of forget no pads again.
Yeah.
Mini camp is essentially the same now as OTAs. As part of the new CBA, they don't put the pads on until like practice number 4 of training camp.
Right.
So it's the whole team, sure. You get everyone back there, but really what you're seeing is a continuation of OTAs to keep these guys safe, to keep them healthy, and to kind of cut down on the hitting.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that that I end up looking at the most is, sorry, that was me grunting as I got up. That was the old man grunt to close the door. As far as the offensive lineman, defensive lineman, you can't tell that much. But I do like, to watch them on the bags and, just their quickness and their feet and everything. This game is played with your hands and your feet. And, so those are the kinds of things you can see when somebody has quick hand movement, things like that. I used to take on blocks when I was at Stanford with my shoulder. You can't do that in the NFL. You get held. They'll just engulf you. So it's hat and hands, it's feet, your footwork. It's like what Perry Hill talks about with shortstops and third basemen and, all the infielders that he coaches up. It's all about your feet. So taking a look at a couple of those things. But, a couple of things stood out. To me, again, the strength of the defensive backfield is really, so Michael Jackson, I was raving about him the last time we were down here. He had a practice where he had an interception, like 3 or 4 knockdowns. And he's letting everybody hear about it. Like, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, but he came running past me. I'm like, that's a big dude, man. That guy is a large corner. The other thing that stood out was the speed of Trey Brown. Trey Brown, just his feet are excellent. And we'll see we don't know what happened with him last year, see if he gets a chance. But, you've already got your starters, right? Tariq Woolen and Devin Witherspoon, who I got a chance to look at him in Jigba as well. Like, I haven't seen a lot of him. But one of the things I saw with Witherspoon, one was there was a play that he held off of, but because he didn't want a collision. Because that's what they're telling the guys now is, like, nobody get a bloody nose from running into each other or anything like that, because the Seahawks got fined a few years ago for that, which was just a random collision that happens. But you got to watch out for that. So the defensive backs are sort of disengaging when it gets to a point where there's going to be, some kind of contact. And so he let a couple go, but there was one where he could have, I don't want to say he would blow up DK Metcalf, because Metcalf looks really like he's been working really hard, but he's a guy who plays the ball really well in the air. So, defensive backs, they were struggling to find corners a few years ago. And, the safety situation looks pretty good as long as Jamal Adams is ready. I think in these things, Mike, when you watch like the 7-on-7, it's a lot of deep passes and things like that. That's where you can figure things out. When they run the ball, you can't really tell anything.
Well, I was kind of looking at formations too, because you're looking for hand placement. From what we got to see, which was not a lot because we had to come in here. I mean, sure, we could have just said, no, we're not doing the show. We're going to stand out there for another hour. We'll get the full sense of it on Thursday when we're back out here. But just kind of how they stacked up, because on defense, we were kind of figuring out, okay, who are the starters going to be? And not to say that what we saw out there right now on June 6th is what you're going to see, but when they did have the five down linemen there, and they went down and he had your true nose tackle there, it was Cam Young. And we were saying, who's going to be there? Because you looked at the starters, and when you have the four guys down there, and just kind of when they were playing and they brought the outside linebackers down, they had, you know, Uchenna and Daryl Taylor on the outside, Jaron Reed and Dre Jones. And then they put Cam Young in for a couple plays in there. When they had just four, and when they were in that nickel set, it looked like, at least maybe from what I saw there, I don't know what it's going to be like, you know, long term or in training camp when it comes close to season, but Tre Brown and Devin Witherspoon out there at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you had Tre Brown, you had Devin Witherspoon. He looked like he'd slid into the middle a little bit, playing slot.
Witherspoon?
Yeah, maybe I was looking at that wrong, but that's what it looked like. So they had slid him in there. Tre Brown was on the outside. Mike Jackson on the outside as well, and then you had your safeties back there. But yeah, the versatility and the depth on the defense. I was just trying to pick up what early formations might look like and try to get a sense of the starters, because there were definitive ones against ones and twos against twos from what we were seeing out there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think a lot of these guys are interchangeable. And so, you know, Kobe Bryant, I mean, he's a guy. Somebody was telling me he's not happy. I don't know that that's true or not. Maybe it was just a random comment because, look, you know, he's kind of the guy. He was the guy last year and played really well. I mean,
in the nickel,
won the Jim Thorpe Award, and you know, he knocked down more passes than anybody in college. And then he came in, and then Tariq Woolen kind of stole the show. Now they go and draft a guy in the first round. So that might be a guy to watch. Just, you know, him and Michael Jackson both, that they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But boy, it seems so far like an embarrassment of riches at corner, because I always say I think corner is one of the hardest jobs next to quarterback. Corner, you got to cover guys like DK Metcalf. So yeah, that's it's interesting to see that. And you know, and I don't really care about Tre Brown's height. That does not worry me one bit. Another guy that looked really good physically, Colby Parkinson. He really beefed up last year, and it looked like he has really been working hard, because he became, I would say, a better than average blocker last year at tight end. And, you know, but now that you have Njigba, maybe they go with more three wide receiver sets instead of that three tight end set that they had a lot. But he was another guy that looked really good out there. Looks like he's been working really hard, and he's got great hands. And even just, there was a throw, like I think one of the ball boys threw it back, and you know, it was like 3 feet over his head, and he just reaches up and grabs it out of the air. And I'm like, that's impressive. So, yeah, it's cool being right down there on ground level watching these guys work.
Yeah, outside in, they definitely seem like, the Seahawks seem like they have an embarrassment of riches, to go back to what you were saying there, with the receivers, the tight ends, the corners, and then working your way in. Okay, the question marks are kind of in the interior, right? The line, the offensive guards, who's going to win those battles. So I think as we kind of get into this, the storylines of camp, and we'll talk about this too, what the storylines will be, they kind of are focused on the interior, right? It seems like last year there was one defining storyline. Who wins the quarterback competition? That hung over everything. Now you have these little position battles, but at least to me, right now on June 6th, it feels like this team already is kind of steps above where they were last year. And it's more of, okay, it might be position battles on a strength-on-strength position. You know, can Jaxon Smith-Njigba be that guy who puts them in more three wide receiver sets? What's going to happen with all of these guys at corner and at safety? Not necessarily, okay, we have to have a guy come in like you had to last year at quarterback and on the offensive line. You're in a much better situation than you were a year ago. Might be less interesting battles at the outset because, you know, quarterback's going to define the stories and the headlines like it did last year. But moving this team from good to great, that's where these get so fascinating to watch as they kind of shake out over the next few months.
Yeah, and by the way, text us at 866-979-3776. Our text line powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Who are you most excited to see? Because you bring up a point there, Mike, that you didn't really know who your corners were going to be. That's a crucial situation. And I had a GM explain this to me one time, that the outside – so if you look at the hash marks, they're about, what, 6 1/3 apart – everything is on the perimeter. Like you, the outside guys, a defensive end gets paid more than a defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Outside backers get paid more than inside backers. Corners get paid more than safeties because the outside of the field, that's where all the athletes live, you know? And so that's where they, you know, they were worried about that. Quarterback is a position, you know, plays everywhere. That's probably the hardest position. Well, it's not probably. It is. It's the hardest position to find a franchise quarterback, a guy that's going to win games and not just win games, but win in the playoffs. So, you know, that was crucial last year. I mean, you had the departure of Russell Wilson and then, you know, you didn't really know what Geno was going to be about. We, at this time last year, probably thought Drew Lock had a 50-50 shot at winning that. But you got that sort of lockdown. You got your corner situation. You have, you know, depth enough that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they traded a guy like Michael Jackson. You know, I mean, there are teams that are desperate for good corner, good cover corners. So, yeah, you have that. It's all in the middle of the field, kind of, the big question marks this year. The other thing, offensive tackles versus guards and centers. Offensive tackles get paid, you know, way more than guards do. Guards are starting to get up there. But, again, the outside of the formation, right? I mean, you're blocking the defensive ends who are some of the greatest athletes, if not, you know, outside of probably the receivers. And you got those two guys locked down now. I mean, at least we're assuming that those guys, their rookie year, if you can play your rookie year, I think you can play your second, third, fourth, fifth year. So you got that part locked down. So it just seems very less crucial. And I think a lot of the answers or the questions and the answers are on the interior part of the offensive line and defensive line.
And that's why, yeah, these next few years are so critical, because if these are the high paid positions, if you have to shell out a ton of money to bring in a tackle, you know, a franchise cornerstone, a tackle, a big-time cornerback, and the Seahawks have these guys on rookie contracts, this is the time to now grow and build. So if all those are settled and your question marks are on the inside, straight down the field, like you were saying, well, that's good. You can find guys and you can have these young guys or veterans you brought in fill those positions, because your premium value spots are guys you're not paying a lot. They're not going to break the bank. You have that depth because you're not shelling out $17 million a year for a cornerback or what, $20 million a year for some offensive tackle. So this is the time now for the Seahawks to grow and become a contender again.
It's a great point because, yeah, those are the guys that make all the money and they're on rookie contract. So yeah, love that part of it. And that this is where, you know, we kind of talked philosophically. This was like 2010, 11, 12, when the Seahawks were accumulating all of those, you know, players like Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, who we saw out there today, which I think he's out there just to give the coaches a hard time.
That's what it seemed like.
He was over there yelling at him, "You can't run that play. What are you doing? This and that."
What was he saying? He yelled at one of the coaches that he had to retire one of his hats that he was wearing. That's what I picked up on. And then Bobby was giving Brian Monet grief because there was an errant pass that fluttered over to where we were, and Monet tried to half-heartedly make a catch on it, and Bobby said, "No, don't try that. Just let that one go." He said, "Don't try that, because I think Monet's still coming back from an injury. You don't want him jumping right now."
Yeah, that's true. And the big guys don't tend to be able to jump, but
or have good hands.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's really cool seeing him out there too. And I don't think he's going to play a whole lot in camp and things like that, but it's just good to see the leadership out there. And, you know, I feel like he's just like a coach on the field. I'm just very curious. That's another thing I'm really curious about. How are they going to use Bobby, number one? Because that was my complaint about him. So in 2020, 2021, I did not get how they were using him. He was on the field for every snap, yet there was lots of times where they did not have him attacking the line of scrimmage. And he can attack the line of scrimmage, but, you know, you could tell that it was some other kind of assignment that they had him, where he was kind of laying off and staying back and almost like he was a safety valve in case anything came out of the middle of the line. Saw him playing much different in L.A. last year against the Rams. So, hey, let's move on real quick. We talked about this a little bit. I think I brought this up on the show yesterday, Mike, about what we thought about the Mariners and who really was crucial. And I don't really recall exactly what your answer was. I know Bob and I talked about two guys. Number one, Jared Kelnick. If you can get out of Jared Kelnick, what you're getting – right now out of him, which he's leading the team in batting average. And I don't know if you remember that conversation, Mike, but, you know, didn't even care about batting average. Just cared about slugging, you know, OPS, you know, hitting in critical times, hitting bombs, which he's tied for first with 10 home runs on this team. And you just thought, man, that's going to give them so much versatility and help them become so much better. And then the other one was J.P. Crawford, who leads the team in walks with 30 on-base percentage. Really good. It's number one on the team. And, yeah, it's just, to me, those two guys have really come through, yet it really hasn't reflected in as far as wins and, you know, some of the other players not really quite living up to their baseball cards right now.
It's interesting that these two, who had big question marks around them, because J.P. Crawford last year, his production really tailed off. And that was, I mean, that's been the story of the past two off seasons for the Mariners. Don't you have to get a shortstop, because are you relying on J.P. Crawford? And they've come out both off seasons and reiterated the confidence in J.P. Crawford. Didn't know what you get out of him, and it turns out a healthy J.P. Crawford, and we're still waiting to see the lineup today, because he did sit out on Sunday, that finale, after banging knees with another Texas guy on Saturday. But assuming J.P. Crawford is healthy, this is what you're getting out of him, and it's been incredibly impressive. I mean, he is among the AL leaders at shortstop in walk rate, in on-base percentage, in weighted runs created. Really, it's just Wander Franco of the Rays, who's incredible, and Bo Bichette of the Blue Jays, who's had some terrific seasons. So J.P. Crawford is one of the best shortstops in the American League right now, and Kelnick has been the biggest surprise of the season, the most pleasant surprise for the Mariners. So you take that as a good sign, but then, Dave, you kind of look at it the other way and say, huh, these two are doing all this, and the Mariners are still struggling this much. So it's the good news, bad news there of, well, where would they be without these two right now? And now almost the joke of, all right, well, these two are doing it. They're getting the production that you thought would be what you needed to get you guys over the top, because Jared Kelnick was a great unknown heading into this year. That was kind of the AJ Pollock move, to give that stability to Kelnick in case you couldn't trot him out there against lefties. Well, Kelnick has been the everyday player. He's been the solid one. Now it's okay. Everyone else, let's pick it up. And we might get into this later. I just heard from the Padres play-by-play guys. I think we might have him on for a preview, but we are going to talk about at some point the fact that, you know, Teoscar Hernandez and Eugenio Suarez, they're kind of the key to the turnaround. They've really struggled a little bit. Shannon Dreher was on our airwaves this morning talking about it. Bump and Stacey had Jason Churchill on yesterday. He broke it down as well. So if Kelnick and Crawford continue to be this effective, because they've been so valuable, arguably the two most valuable bats in the Mariners lineup this year in terms of stability and consistency, well, you got to have that boost. You got to have that power behind him. That's where all the runs are going to come from, and you haven't gotten that right now. But take it as a good sign that Crawford and Kelnick are doing this to essentially carry the Mariners' offense.
You know, and I'm looking at, you know, you could go, okay, well, the last time they had really a good win streak was against the A's in Pittsburgh. But, you know, I always say when you come up against a team like the A's, you did what you should have done to them. Now, there was 2-3-2 wins, but whatever. It's a win, and, you know, they won 6-1, 11-2, but swept the four-game series with the Oakland A's. And then, you know, Pittsburgh was fairly hot. At that point, they started to cool down, and, you know, now they're sort of right around 500. But I don't know. I guess their kryptonite is teams that just crush the ball, because you got the Yankees and Texas. Hopefully San Diego doesn't get super healthy on them. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like they have a better record right now than they did last year. I think they're 25-30 mm-hmm. last year, or maybe it was a little bit less. Anyway, 29-30 right now. They're one game below 500, and this is going to be an interesting swing here with these two games against San Diego and the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah, I think just a concern before we get to take two, so I'll quickly kind of say my piece. The concern is more of just looking around, and because the record is not in a vacuum. So a 29-30 record last year, that's okay, because, you know, the Rangers weren't as good. The Angels weren't as good. The Red Sox were struggling. They didn't make the playoffs last year. The fact that now all these teams are good, there are more teams to kind of fight through. And so when you look at what the Mariners are doing in terms of not having a lock on one of these playoff spots, the fact that there are so many teams to kind of claw through, to get back up and take over in the standings, that's where it's concerning. Record-wise, and in terms of how slow it started last year, yeah, it is better right now. But because of where last year finished and the expectations of not just getting back and, you know, making it into the playoffs again, but building off of that momentum from last year, at this point, it looks like a tough task. So it's not as bad record-wise, but with the teams around you, there's going to be some work to get done.
I just thought it was really weird that those were the two guys that we,
Crawford
pointed
and Kelnick,
out in the offseason, and we thought, okay, if they're doing what they're doing, and you would have presented these numbers at that time, you would have said, okay, this is a team that's probably 5, 6, 7 games above 500. All right, let's take two.
Right. After a rough weekend series in Texas, the Mariners are back in action in San Diego tonight against the Padres. Logan Gilbert gets the ball for the Mariners, and he squares off against Joe Musgrove for the Padres.
I'm looking at Joe Musgrove's game logs. He had a good outing the last time, 6 innings against Miami. They won 10-1. No earned runs given up. No earned runs to start before at the Yankees. They won that game 5-1, but the couple before, we hope we get this Joe Musgrove that gave up 4 earned runs twice in a row against the Dodgers in Boston.
You're going to like this, Dave. Do you know why he had a delayed start to the season? He dropped a kettlebell on his foot. Like, it's such a Wyman injury. At the end of February, he hurt his foot. He dropped a kettlebell on it. So he had a delayed start to the season. It looks like he's kind of rounding into form. This is going to be a big 1-2 punch here for the Mariners with Gilbert today and then Kirby tomorrow. Because tomorrow, Michael Wacha is going for the Padres. He was, just the National League Pitcher of the Month for the month of May. So it's going to be good pitching on good pitching again. Fascinated to see how this series shakes out.
All right, let's get on with take two, but I'm going to tell a story in the next segment about something that got dropped on my foot.
Okay.
Not a kettlebell, though.
I'm interested to hear that story. I'm honestly am.
It'll be pathetic, Brady.
No, I'm skinny. A strong breeze could break my foot, so you're fine. All right, second up, 2 players on the Cleveland Browns, cornerback Greg Newsome II and defensive tackle Perrion Winfrey, were robbed at gunpoint after leaving a nightclub in Cleveland early Monday morning. Jewelry and Newsome's truck were stolen.
Sheesh. Kind of a nightclub. I have to say, one time I went to a nightclub that was disreputable here, mm-hmm. here in Bellevue. Disreputable, not disruptible. And there was a little confrontation. Somebody bumped into somebody, and there was a much smaller guy than me. And I said something to him, and then he sort of bowed up and said something to me. And I looked at him. I go, "You have a gun, don't you?" And he's like,
"Jeez."
And he just kind of stared at me like, "Yeah." I'm like, "All right, that's it. That's the last time I ever went there." Chuck Knox used to always say, you know, stay off the streets. Don't throw the ball so far over the fence you can't go get it the next day. Nothing good happens after midnight. So, yeah, it looks like Perrion Winfrey and Greg Newsome need to start finding better places to hang out.
Yeah.
Not where you're going to get robbed at gunpoint.
Right. I mean, you do have to realize, like you were saying, I mean, when you are an NFL player, there are different responsibilities and there are different precautions you have to take because you are a public figure. You're someone who people know. They have a lot of money. I mean, you've heard these stories, right? Like, unfortunately, it's such a terrible thing that happens, but athletes' homes getting robbed while they're playing a game. Well, you know, while they're playing a road game, and, you know, people know that they're not going to be there, and if you don't have the security precautions. So you just have to be careful. And I'm glad the level-headed Wyman has prevailed in that situation for you.
That's for sure. All right, take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Go to Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate to find out more. All right, coming up next, what will be the biggest position battles to watch this offseason? We kind of previewed that a little bit, but things are starting to heat up here down at the VMAC. We'll talk about that next on Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko. And before we get to the Seahawk news, got a few texts here. Of course, wise guys. Something that dropped on Dave's foot, the first wheel. All right. You know what it was?
Let's get to the story.
I've got a rockery, and, you know, it's probably 3 feet high. And so, you know, I have to climb up there because there's other trees, and I have to blow the, you know, all the leaves down to the edge of the yard, rake them up, everything. And I was thinking of Cal Raleigh, mm-hmm. and, you know, anybody. Like, we saw this happen to Teoscar Hernandez the other day, where he fouls a ball off his foot. Oh, I mean, it's not like this, you know, mortal pain, like you're going to die, but it's like a stinging thing that not only it catches your attention and kind of takes your breath away for a second, but it also is like, that's going to hurt for probably, I remember this one, we were in a walkthrough in Miami one time and our biggest defensive tackle stepped on my foot. And, you know, it's not like I was going to miss the game, but I was going to have a black and blue toe and a nail that was going to come off for about 4 weeks. And it's just something that nags you. But anyway, so I was, you know, up there and a little rock from the rockery, probably about 10 pounds, fell on my foot. I thought about Cal Raleigh because, you know, he already gets beat up where he was talking about his inner thigh, all the bruises that he gets there. That's the one spot that mostly. But then, you know, every once in a while you'll see him foul one off his foot or something like that. And it's not like it hurts really bad. It's just that it's like, that's going to bother me.
You know,
for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's surprisingly very hurtful, annoying, you know, an annoying little hurtful impact. It doesn't, you know, injure you. It doesn't completely take you out of commission. But a surprising, like, wow, that hurts more than I thought. If you drop a bottle of, like, shampoo or body wash, have you done this? Like, right on your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And it just slips out, and then right there, right on the toe.
Yeah.
You've never done that.
I mean, I've done all kinds of things.
Yeah. Your feet are, like, dead from everything you've dropped on them.
Well, one time I washed my face without closing my eyes. I forgot. Got soap in my eyes.
Is that an injury?
How does that happen?
It's just stupidity. I don't know. I was thinking about other things, Mike. That's what the old mind's always working upstairs there. Anyway.
You just took a handful of soap and
threw it in your eyes. I just forgot. I forgot to close the eyes. So there's you think I find all kinds of ways. This started when I was in high school. My ankles were really bad. Like, they would just twist. I was walking down to get the mail, and I twisted my ankle walking down to get the mail. Another time I was coming back with my mail. Somebody had cut these palm fronds off of trees at Stanford that have these big spikes, and I walked into one of the spikes, and it went all the way in my leg and broke off. So I just saw like a bloody spot there. But then later on, I'm working out, and I'm like, something's wrong. I went to the emergency room. They pulled a spike that was like 3 inches long out of my leg. So, yeah, all kinds of ways to get hurt.
Yeah. My friends and I, when we were little, we were walking around exploring some woods or like on a trail, and one of them pushed through and like pushed back a branch. Well, little kid not thinking what happens when you push a branch, and it snapped back and then hit me in the face because I was the guy right behind him. Well, that's always an unpleasant memory.
That's pretty good.
Hey, push it aside. Walk on, and then whiplash hits the guy behind you.
For a guy that went to Stanford, Wally from Snoqualmie, you sure do lots of dumb bleep, Dave. Yeah, that's true. Also, somebody sent a picture of Wooster High School. Do you see that? On the text toy right there. Oh, in all its glory, the parking lot. That's the back parking lot, by the way. We used to call it, that's where the stoners go. That's where they would go back and smoke weed in the back of Wooster High School, the parking lot there. So that was my little rockery story. But I instantly thought of Cal because, again, it's not like it's an injury and it's going to, you know, hurt you. It's just going to be in the back of your mind and something you have to go get treatment on and something you have to worry about. And it's just those little ticky-tack type of injuries that especially for a catcher. And I so admire Cal. Because he's such a tough guy. He just never reacts to it. You can see every once in a while he'll put his head down for a second. And you're like, you know, he's going, oh, man, I wish that hadn't happened.
Well, we have some Mariners news, actually. So I know we're going to talk football here. But we have some good news. Some guys we were waiting to hear on. And I know Jerry Dipoto mentioned this last week. And Justin Hollander has just announced that Andres Munoz and Dylan Moore have both been reinstated.
Sweet.
So they are back. They are ready. Now, the two corresponding moves, Trevor Gott placed on the 15-day IL, low back muscle spasms, and Sam Haggerty sent down to AAA Tacoma. But there you go. There are some reinforcements. And I guess maybe the much-anticipated debut of Dylan Moore, because now the expectations have gotten so out of proportion for Dylan Moore that he's only expected to be, what, just the savior of this entire offense. Because of the lack of production and because of the, this is the alternative. We haven't seen Dylan Moore yet. So he's kind of been held up as the guy that could be the fix. It's probably an unfair expectation to throw on him, but that's what you're going to hope for. The bigger news, I think, is Andres Munoz.
See, that's the question I was going to ask. If you could only have one of those guys back, Andres Munoz.
Well, okay.
I don't feel – I'm with you. I don't feel like
– Jose Caballero changes that answer, because if you would have asked me this before Jose Caballero had emerged as a reliable option, absolutely Dylan Moore.
Yeah.
There needed to be something. That's why Dylan Moore kept getting brought out as, well, this can be the guy. All right, well, he can be the platoon option, and he can be the fix for these struggles. But Jose Caballero has kind of mitigated a little bit of that. Andres Munoz now gives you even more depth, can shuffle your bullpen back to kind of the matchups you like, where you don't have to have Matt Brash in as many high leverage situations and get a result of bad luck there. Corey Brock in The Athletic today had a good piece that Matt Brash has been one of the most unlucky pitchers in baseball this year, because the balls in play that he's giving up, the high, well, it's an acronym, it's called BABIP.
BABIP, yeah.
Batting average on balls in play. Right. His is the highest by far. Mm-hmm. So when that happens in the high leverage situations, or in a situation where he's in against the Rangers in a 1-0 game, that's a fluky, unlucky run. But if you can push him up a little bit and you have Munoz and Seawald and vice versa, like you did last year, and they were so effective, well, Brash coming on in the 6th or the 7th, you can mitigate that. And we saw Matt Brash, and he was great in the 6th and the 7th last year. So if these are the roles you slide back to, this Andres Munoz news is huge for the Mariners.
By the way, speaking of Matt Brash, and we'll push. We were going to talk a little bit about, you know, the quarterback battle last year with the Seahawks, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, I love Brash when he throws that sweeper and he knows he's got a guy. Mm-hmm. He turns around. I don't even know if he realizes he does that. Because remember the one, was it Ramirez, that he screwed into the earth, according to Aaron Goldsmith? But he did that the other day to a hitter. Like, he knows. And he seems kind of cocky out on the mound, but he's not in person. He's a super nice kid. But, you know, I need Dylan Moore to play really well and really help this team, because I keep comparing guys like DJ Dallas and Jarek Reed, who we're going to talk to Dylan Moore. He's our Dylan Moore. I mean, he's just a utility guy. I can do all kinds of things for you. But, yeah, I'm rooting for Dylan Moore. He's easy to like, and you know, I'm starting to get more popular here in Seattle. He has, like, a car commercial and things like that. But, yeah, I think right now, Andres Munoz, and you're right, Caballero definitely does change that whole outlook. All right, coming up, it's a move that stunned the sports world today. We'll talk about the implications of it next. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and SeattleSports.com.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko. We're down at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. We're going to talk to Jarek Reed here pretty soon. Later on, also, we're going to get John Boyle from Seahawks.com. Talk a little bit of Seahawks since we're down here. We're also going to talk to Jesse Agler. You've been putting that together while you're doing radio, Mike. Just multitasking over there. He's the Padres radio play-by-play man. We talked to him last year or a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When we were talking about the spider tag.
He kind of broke your guys' minds about that, because he kind of told us something we weren't that aware of, and then it became a big talking point throughout the rest of the season. So he's almost like a soothsayer. He's a fortune teller.
Yeah, well, we'll see if he has anything for us. In other news, as far as the... I remember when this story happened, when a lot of the PGA players, Phil Mickelson comes to mind. You said Brooks Koepka.
Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka. I mean, those are probably the biggest names that we all know.
Yeah, they all bolted for the LIV Golf Association that's run by the Saudis, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was kind of an interesting bit of news this morning.
Yeah, and, you know, it would take something like this for us to talk golf on this show, or especially in a segment, but it's worth it. And I know El Hombre will feel passionately about that, so we can certainly bring that up to him, because, you know, as an athlete, Dave, and I know someone who has been, you know, you've been part of organizations, whether it's a players association, whether it's, you know, playing for the NFL, it's just stunning what happened, because there were all these guys who left for LIV, and the PGA guys who remained behind, Rory McIlroy, one of the most notable vocal ones, they condemned them. Even PGA Commissioner Jay Monahan condemned them, and they were saying, all right, these guys are banned from the PGA. They sold their souls for the money. We don't want to be part of that. And it turned into this very contentious battle between the PGA and LIV. The PGA sued all the golfers who left, and they sued LIV. And then all of a sudden, this morning, out of nowhere, and the reaction on Twitter from PGA golfers, they were stunned. Colin Morikawa, who's a famous, very good golfer now. He's been very successful on the PGA Tour. No one knew about it. They found out when we all did on Twitter. Or what happened was it was on CNBC. Jay Monahan kind of broke the news that the PGA has merged with LIV. Essentially, the Saudi-backed organization kind of bought them out. They're funneling all this money their way now. But the PGA, after saying, hey, go get your blood money. Actually, hey, we're going to work with these guys. And the golfers that suck behind, like Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy, they have been offered like hundreds of millions to go join this tour. And it was a matter of pride, right? They said, we're going to stay on this tour that we grew up with, that's associated with golf, that we know it. And to do that, I can't imagine what these players are thinking right now than to see the head of the organization, the PGA commissioner, really just stab him in the back and say, we put you out there. You were the shield and you were the vocal critics right of this. Yeah, we're going to go behind your back and sign a deal with this rival organization.
Yeah, and take their money.
Yeah.
That you weren't allowed to because you
exactly
were loyal to the PGA. Yeah, and do you remember the numbers, like what some of the numbers that it was just the purses that they were playing for, right?
Well, with Mickelson, there was something that came out. Oh, they got a ton of money. They got paid a ton just to go there. And then the purses each week, there was some tweet. I think the LIV event that just happened, its most recent one, paid out like $4 million to the winner. So yeah, the money is much greater, and it was a matter of principle and a matter of pride to stay on this tour, because sure, you could go over to LIV and you can get a ton of money, but the guys that stayed on the PGA, it's because there was an inherent loyalty, or it's because they felt passionately about that organization that probably helped them grow up in golf. You know, it's an association that helps golfers work their way up to pros, and it's kind of all they knew. This secondary tour branched out. It was the breakaway tour, and to stay loyal to what you knew and then only to see that and have everything kind of blow up in your face, it's got to be a terrible feeling right now.
So it's all under the same umbrella, PGA, LIV.
Now it is, yeah.
Everything. So, yeah, and I guess that's the one thing. If you're one of those guys that like, oh, I'm gonna be loyal to the PGA. You know, you were asking me during the break if I'd ever experience anything kind of like that. One of the things that kind of came to mind was the 1987 strike. Mm-hmm. We went on strike my rookie year, the NFL did, and I knew from my agent, Marvin Demoff, who was just brilliant and the best agent I think in NFL history. He knew that they were going to be able to get the NFL, the Players Association was going to be able to get the NFL in court at the end of the year, and there was going to be free agency. So, you know, and then, you know, a couple of years later, we got Plan B free agency, and now it's, you know, much more open and you know, benefits the players much more. But there were guys that missed game checks and sat out on strike because they, you know, they thought they were being loyal to the Players Association and everything, association. But then the NFL ended up giving them free agency anyway. It ends up happening later. So for me, I mean, and it wasn't a lot of money, but I do remember my rookie year, I missed out on $40,000. That's what four games, you know, missing four games for me was. So it's similar where, you know, you kind of, but this is much more of a betrayal.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
The NFL Players Association urged all the players to go on strike, and we decided to do that. And there wasn't nearly as much money, but if you're a guy like, you know, who's the guy you mentioned that didn't go, and was it Koepka, or did he end up going?
Oh, Koepka went. No, it's guys like Rory McIlroy and John Rahm and Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, they're like, hey, man, I grew up with the PGA. I'm going to be loyal to them. There's no way I'm going to this LIV. We make enough money. And then all of a sudden this happens.
And yeah, so I found that deal, the big news breaker when Phil signed. It was for $200
million. Wow.
That was just to
That's
sign.
What he got up front.
Just to sign with that tour.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you could have gotten offered that, which some golfers did, like a Rory McIlroy, and said, no, I'm turning that down because I believe in what we have here.
Yeah.
How are you feeling right now when you could have turned down maybe $100 million or $200 million and the association you stay loyal to just made a deal anyway?
Well, I would say this. It hurts a guy like that a little bit less just because he's already probably got a big chunk of change. But I would totally feel betrayed by the PGA. And I wonder who some of the reps from the PGA that they were talking to you know, to say, hey, we're with you, man, this and that. And then all of a sudden this happens. Yeah, that's got to be frustrating. Mm-hmm. Very frustrating. All right. Coming up next, we're going to catch up with hopefully Mike Ford in our Mariners player spotlight. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. It's Dave Wyman and Mike Lefkoe.